Hello, 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 and welcome to episode 108 of the City Brew Tours podcast, where we feature the best craft beer cities around the United States. I'm your host, Brian. Welcome back to another wonderful episode here. Sadly, our final episode covering the great city of Cincinnati, Cincinnati. I don't say Cincinnati to make it like downput it. They get nasty in a good way in Cincinnati. Co-host, bail me out of this. Welcome back, my wonderful co-host for these Cincinnati episodes, Braxton.
Yes. Hello, hello. You know, anytime you get in trouble in Cincinnati, just say who day, and I think it clears everything up. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, you're a fan of our team. Okay, so who day? Now nobody's going to be mad at us from Cincinnati.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you. Thank you again. Thank you for bailing me out. How you doing, bud? How's your week been so far?
So far, so good. I mean, the weather's a little terrible in Pittsburgh, but you know, we'll get over it. It's summertime. Just feels like fall right now, but you know, you live in Pittsburgh, so it's gonna rain and be dark.
It's gonna rain.
But we have these beers here to lighten us up, to brighten our day. I'm looking at the beer right now. It's beautiful.
We do have two beautiful beers today. Two beautiful cans, beers with beautiful artwork, and two beers which in themselves are beautiful, and I'm excited to drink tonight. So to close out the month featuring the wonderful city of Cincinnati, Ohio, we are featuring two breweries. One of those is Mad Tree, which is quite a large brewery, if I'm not mistaken, if my numbers aren't off, the second largest production brewery in the Cincinnati area, if you don't count Sam Adams, Rheingeist, and then Mad Tree. We are featuring their Ajuevo Mexican style lager, and our second featured brewery tonight is going to be the wonderful folks over at Urban Artifact. We are featuring their The Gadget Raspberry and Blackberry Midwest Fruit Tart. And we're eventually going to be joined by a wonderful guest from Urban Artifact that can tell us a lot about that brewery, their fruit tarts, and the church which they occupy. But before that, Braxton, we gotta. I used to not like these double beer episodes because we don't get to ask the guest about two beers, but I feel like we get the beer way faster. So let's get to this Mad Tree Ajuevo. Shout out to all the beer club subscribers joining us while we record the podcast. If you want to join us while we record the podcast, consider becoming a subscriber. It helps us keep the lights on here at the City Brew Tours podcast and beer club. And you also get these great beers shipped to you. And you get to join us on Tuesday nights while we record these and enjoy these beautiful beers with us.
Absolutely.
So yeah, somebody asked which beautiful can are we getting to first? I the Mad Tree Ajuevo. They probably sent that message like 2 minutes ago and I just saw it. But yeah, we're going to be starting with this Mad Tree Mexican style lager. Exactly what I would like to start with. My little secret is that I start, I prep every episode by drinking a nice light lager to get, you know, loosen me up. So I feel like this is a nice transition. Cheers, Braxton.
Cheers. So what I like about this beer is the fact that, you know, that it says there's yellow corn in this, and I don't think I've had a Mexican style lager anywhere that ever had yellow corn. So right there, that kind of caught me off guard. I was like, this is going to be interesting. Like, I can't wait. Yeah, like, okay, you're keeping with the roots. I appreciate this. Usually they put a little lime in and say, oh, it's a Mexican style now. We put a little lime in there. Like, okay, all right.
Yes, I believe this one does not have any lime in it. It does have agave sugar in it. And like Braxton mentioned, they are utilizing yellow corn flakes along with a Pilsner and Vienna malts to create a really nice malt base for this beer. And then they are using Sultana hops, which is kind of a new hop that I am not 100% familiar with. I want to say it's a Pacific Northwest variety. Let's see. Yeah, it is. It is a Pacific Northwest variety. It's a cross between Nugget, Zeus, and an experimental USDA hop. So you could definitely expect a lot of that Nugget, like pininess, and maybe a little bit of grapefruit from the Zeus, which is also known as CTZ or Columbus, Tomahawk and Zeus for short, but used very sparingly in this beer, clocking in at an unknown level of IBUs, but 4.7% ABV. I don't think the hops are coming through very much on here. They're adding a nice bitterness balancing characteristic to this, and maybe a little bit in that aroma.
I'm loving that aftertaste. I feel like I'm getting a little bit of that yellow corn, but it could just be me hyping up the yellow corn. It's affecting my brain, but it's a nice, I like it.
No, don't sell yourself short, man. I'm there with you. I got that corn, that kind of flaked maize, like sugary sweetness that comes mm-hmm. from corn and beers. Yeah.
I'm just so used to somebody putting a lime in it that it kind of just throws me off. I'm so just taken aback that you went a whole entire different route with this beer. It's like, okay, you wanted to try something different. So yeah, this is definitely something you can have.
Braxton, I feel like you really want to put a lime in this beer. You've mentioned it numerous times now.
Well, I don't want to ruin it. I recently learned what a michelada is, which is just like lime juice going in there. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, can I have a michelada in this? I was like, let me look this up. I was like, of course you can. And she loved it. So, okay.
Micheladas are cool, but have you heard of Slamburger?
I have not. And you were really quick to bring that out. Is that a sponsor that I don't know about?
Underberg is not a sponsor, but if they would like to sponsor us, I would happily accept them as a sponsor. A Slamburger is where you take this thing called an Underberg, and it's a digestif from Germany, similar to, Jägermeister, Malort, any kind of those aperitifs, if you're familiar. So you just dump your Underberg into the beer. And funny enough, this is an Underberg that I actually bought at Urban Artifact earlier this month when I visited Cincinnati. So Slam Burgers, cheers.
Cheers. And then I'll have to try that someday.
So with that said, I think it's time we welcome our guest on to talk more about Urban Artifact, learn about our featured beer tonight, and learn more in our final episode featuring Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So, please join us in welcoming. He is the CFO and co-founder of Urban Artifact, Scotty Hunter.
Brian, Braxton, how you guys doing? Thanks for having me.
Hey, great. Great to have you.
Yeah, excited to be here.
I'm doing especially phenomenal because Underberg makes your tummy feel good. And I am. That was the best choice I've ever made to start off a podcast by slamming a slam burger.
I crushed a big burrito and I should have also joined you in that Underberg, but I was not as well prepared. So, you know.
Well, I would like to thank you and the wonderful bartender that helped me when I bought this Underberg for helping start this podcast off great. With that said, let's get started like we always do with our quick sip questions. These are fast questions. Quick answers is what we're looking for, and it'll help us get to know you quickly. Scotty, are you ready?
I'm ready.
What's your favorite non-Urban Artifact beer?
Favorite non-Urban Artifact beer? That is going to be Schenkerlau Helles, the smoked German lager. My go-to all the time.
Good answer. Favorite place other than a brewery to grab a drink in Cincinnati?
Longfellow's Other Room. It's a kind of late night hole-in-the-wall tiki bar that's joined by it butts up against another bar and basically, you know, just all rum cocktails.
Nice. Okay. Nice. Favorite season in Cincinnati?
I guess I'll default to fall just because it's not too crazy weather and we're right there where basketball's starting, football's in full swing. You know, it's a pretty good time. We don't get bad weather really other than some heat, but you know, fall's pretty sweet.
I'm surprised nobody has answered football season. Whatever. I guess fall technically, yes. Favorite place you've ever traveled?
Man, I really, it's a tie and you're not, and they're not going to make sense why they're tied at all, but New York City, I love it for just the, you know, breadth of it and the public transit's fantastic. And then Chattanooga, Tennessee is one of my favorite places in the country that I've ever been to. It doesn't get the respect that it deserves, but maybe I don't want people to because might not have the same char.
It is so crazy you said Chattanooga, because I actually work full-time for Little Debbie, and their manufacturing facility and headquarters is in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So I'm really familiar with that city, and it is very underrated, and it has a great aquarium. It's pretty cool. Like, I was like, oh, it's nice. In the middle of Tennessee, you have a dope aquarium next to a river. I was like, okay.
Wait, I have to derail the podcast. You work for you fucking work for Little Debbie? We've never talked about this.
I do. Yes, I do sales for them. So I'm the district sales rep for Pittsburgh. So I got hired in July, so it's coming up on a year. And like the next week was our national sales conference. So everybody from the company that does sales comes to Chattanooga, and I was like, oh, this is a nice little city. Like, got to walk around. They have like this Ferris wheel, now merry-go-round, and it's just really cool. All the like little nifty stuff they have. I'm like, this is weird, but it's fun, and it's an hour from Atlanta, so it's like win-win.
Oh yeah.
Well, I feel like with the salespeople for Chattanooga, they're going to get an increase in population thanks to us. So yeah, you're welcome, Chattanooga.
We're going to have to talk about a beer. I'll trade you some 11th hour beer. You give me some Little Debbie's.
Okay. We can make that work.
I'm just blown away. I can't believe we've never talked about this. All right. Back on trail. Scotty, have you ever seen Bigfoot?
Is this a Missing Link reference from our brewery?
No, no, I don't know. I don't know why,
but yeah.
Some time ago, I just started asking every single guest that we have on if they've seen Bigfoot. So
I know this is supposed to be quick, but we do a yearly event now from harvested yeast from a underground beer tunnel under Cincinnati. And my business partner, Brett, always dresses up in basically a Bigfoot outfit as the Missing Link. And it was actually like a month ago. So I was like, oh, that's a good pull.
I was fortunate enough to try two of the beers from the Missing Link series this year. Funny enough, one from Mad Tree and one from Urban Artifact.
That's nice. Yeah. Those are the last two that were kicking around still.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for the quick sip answers.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So, Scotty, before we get into the fruit tart process and that how that pairs into our second beer, the one from you guys, can you tell me a little bit of how you and your partner came together to make a brewery? And also, where did the name Urban Artifact came from? I was thinking about it as I'm looking at this can. That's just a nice, smooth name. It just rolls off the tongue, Urban Artifact. Like, oh, that's cool. I'm going to go there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll try to give the kind of abbreviated version of the starting out just because it can get a little long-winded. Anyway, me and one of my business partners, Brett, went to school at Ohio University in Athens, Ohio, so Southeast Ohio. We both studied chemical engineering, and we started a Humber Club that I think is still going to this day, but, you know, pandemic aside, you know, that kind of threw things for a loop. Anyway, you know, we joked about like, oh, how cool would it be to start a brewery? And you know, there was nothing much to it at that point in time, but we graduate, we get jobs, we work for a little while. And then we're like, you know what, let's actually get serious about this. Let's start like formulating some ideas and putting together a business plan. And we went through a number of different iterations. We went to have a focus, right? So Urban Artifact makes fruit tart. So that's, you know, real fruit, going to have balancing acidity, broadly categorized as sour, but I think that term tends to be a little more limiting. So anyway, we landed on that focus after a number of different iterations. Brett and his wife went to hike the Appalachian Trail from Albany to Georgia after she graduated from her master's program. And the plan was kind of fundraise and kind of try to get everything going. Once they got back, I was still, you know, doing some networking, working on the business plan, things like that while they were on the trail. About 5 or 6 weeks into their trip, we got connected through a mutual friend to our now current business partner, Scott Hand. They had this deal set up with another person who was going to handle brewing for them. And they left 2 days before the loan signing with a bunch of equity and, you know, a bank loan that was on the table. We connected with Scott because we had already built our business plan and, you know, it still needed a little bit of refinement, but we were prepared. He loved what we wanted to do, you know, beer wise, we loved what he wanted to do venue wise and just, you know, broader concept. And so it was, you know, we basically jumped in and married him in about 2 weeks. Brett and Steph, 2 days later from me meeting Scott, had flown back to Cincinnati, got off the Appalachian Trail, and about 9 months after that, we opened Irvin Artifact. So, yeah, it was a bit of a whirlwind for sure. The name question. You know, I keep telling people that at some point in time, I'm gonna like refine this a little bit to make it a better story than it really is. So, you know, when you have three different, you know, partners trying to come across a name that we all agree on, it's difficult. You know, we had a just probably almost probably 100 name long spreadsheet. Every time somebody had an idea, a name would go on there that everybody would vote, you know, Wise would vote and things like that. And it came down to actually just Artifact as the one where nobody hated it. Like that, you know, nobody hated it.
I don't hate it.
Yes. And, you know, so we go through, we submit a trademark and things like that just to make sure they're going to be protected because, you know, brand names for a beer, you know, you can pivot, but if you can't change a brewery name, that's a real, real trouble. It got kicked back because there is an Artifacts winery in California. And so we had a pivot. We're like, well, what do we do? We really like this. We played with some other things. But ultimately, I really love what we landed on in terms of Urban Artifact because I think it really fits with what we do and our space that we're in the sense that, you know, we're in a 150-year-old Catholic church that's a registered historic building, right? It's a beautiful property. And, you know, we've done a lot to stabilize and revitalize that property. And then also, we've taken really old school brewing techniques and just updated them, you know, modernized them with science, right? So I think it fit us even better than what we were going for originally. And then the last like little piece to that is we wanted a name that wasn't like something like just brewing company, that it could stand alone on its own, right? We have when we started off, we did live music 7 nights a week and a lot of different events and programming. You know, so we wanted Urban Artifact to not be only liquid, but also be this establishment. And if it was just, you know, whatever brewing, you know, we didn't think it was going to play as well in terms of that crowd where we're trying to bring in, you know, great touring artists and local acts and things like that.
Awesome. You don't need to fix that. That's perfect the way it is. It's true for unless people, okay, I see where you're going with this.
I've had some practice.
To piggyback on what Braxton said, it is a immediately recognizable, memorable name. When I went out to Cincinnati about a year ago to shoot the Next Exit episode, the number one brewery people told me to go to, other than the ones that we planned on going and featuring on the show, was Urban Artifact. And that name just stuck in my head. Like, that is such a good name. You hear names for breweries sometimes and you're like, okay, yeah, that sounds cool. But then there's certain names that just stick in your head. And you got yourself a good one there.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
So you mentioned this already, but Urban Artifact brews almost entirely what you call fruit tarts, or more specifically Midwest fruit tarts. So can you explain to us what is a fruit tart and how is the process behind these beers different than other fruited sours that listeners may be familiar with?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll focus kind of more on the Midwest fruit tart in the sense that it's heavily fruited, clean acidity, higher alcohol content. Midwest fruit tarts are going to be the most amount of fruit that we put in a kind of everyday product. There are some special one-offs that get different treatments, but, you know, day-to-day, that's the most fruit we use. And it's a lot of fruit, right? We use about 1 million pounds per year. You're reading the back of the can, yeah. Yes. You heard it right, Braxton. You heard it.
Better get a farm. You need an orchard.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I'm going to try to key in on a few things that we do differently than most other breweries. Then, you know, some people might have adapted some of these practices at this point in time. We're not shy about sharing, right? Like the National Homebrewers Association, they have an article out about how to brew a Midwest fruit tart. If you want to homebrew a Midwest fruit tart, you know, various podcasts, they go into some details too. But, you know, broadly in the category of quick sours, right? So historically how that would happen process-wise is people would mash, barge, collect wort in the boil kettle, and then they would take grain that they had milled and inoculate the wort that way by tossing that grain that's just going to have some live bacteria on it, right? And so you have this liquid that's already pretty hot, getting a, you know, kind of uncontrolled microbe going into it, which is just at the, you know, back 200 years ago, right? They didn't know any better, right? They didn't have any better methods, but we're looking at this and saying, well, you're losing control in a number of different ways. One being temperature, right? Most fermentations are not going to be exceeding 70 degrees when you're talking about ales. We do push things a little bit more with some of our stuff into the 80 degrees. There are still really cool yeast now that can ferment at warmer temperatures. But, you know, a mash is going to come into your boil kettle in the low 100s, 120 plus. So you have it, it's hot. There's oxygen exposure because it's not a closed vessel. And then you don't have control of that micro, right? You're kind of at the whim of whatever it is on that yeast. So basically what we do is we mash, barge, collect wort. We boil it to sterilize it so we can control what we're putting into it. Send that to a fermenter after chilling it down. We have a pure pitch of our house lactobacillus, which is the bacteria that does the souring that we actually caught on our facility when we were first building out. Yeah, that's it. If you want it, we can get in that process. It's kind of interesting, but it's pretty rudimentary. But anyway, so we pitch that lacto, and then we temperature control. And so one of the things I always point out with, especially oxygen exposure, is you can run into some really off compounds. So like vomit and baby diaper are two descriptors that can happen with that sort of old rudimentary process. So anyway, that happens, and then we bring it back to a boil kettle, and we just finish off like you would any other beer. You're going to add a little bit of bittering hops that we use, and then, you know, if we're going to add some spices to that particular beer, why those then during the normal standard boil, back to a fermenter, and then dosing it with a ton of fruit. Now, when we're talking about fruit and what we do and how we do it, we don't. It's rare that we buy pasteurized fruit, right? Most brewers are buying their fruit from a few select suppliers that are supplying pasteurized fruit. And why that's significant is that pasteurized fruit is generally flash pasteurized. So that means it's taking that fruit solids and liquid to a elevated temperature, about 200 degrees, for a short period of time and then chilling it back down. So that will degrade a number of the finer aromatics and flavor compounds going through that process. Whereas we literally have a vessel that we call a fruit cooker because it is a 60 barrel steam jacketed vessel that is our third vessel on our brew house. And it's got a large impeller in there. And we pump our fruit in there. We do low temp pasteurization, normally about 170-ish degrees for an extended period of time. Basically, you know, kill off any of those wild microbes, and then we send that fruit into the fermenter with that beer that's already fermenting and let it rip and ferment it dry. And, you know, the last thing I'll say about the fruit specifically is we ferment everything dry with our Midwest fruit tarts. So that means, you know, there's not going to be residual sugars. It makes it a lot more drinkable that it's not super, super sweet. And then we do also pass everything through a centrifuge, which is basically just a big giant filter, if you think about it simply. And what that does, it pulls out the solids. And I, you know, there's going to be some people out there that they want that thickness, that viscosity in their products. And like, I get that conceptually, but we've done blind tastes. It doesn't add any value in terms of flavor. And we want a, you know, just as intensive a flavor experience as we can provide people. So that's why we do it that way. In addition, also fruit is expensive. So it lets us get more liquid out when we do run it through the centrifuge, which is good for the long-term existence and sustainability of urban artifact.
Yeah, I've heard centrifuge can net you about 30% more yield on any given batch. So that has to be super important. I don't know if the folks understand the difference between processing real fruit and what most breweries do. The majority of breweries that are putting fruit into their beer are taking it from a prepackaged, like Scotty said, pasteurized. They're taking pasteurized fruit juice that's in a prepackaged shelf stable product and dumping it into the beer at a certain point, typically after fermentation and or towards the end of fermentation. The fact that you process the vast majority of your fruit from harvest, and meaning it hasn't gone through preservation like a lot of fruits do,
yep,
is admirable. And for the production team, I can imagine quite crazy at times.
Yeah, and you're right. We've done crazier when we were first starting off too, and I think that's something I like to throw in there when I can explain it to people. So we do this key lime beer every summer called Key Punch, and when we first started off, we couldn't source the same way that we do now, right? So we had to buy whole key limes and hand process them, and 500 pounds of key limes is a lot of individual key limes if you think about the size of them. So the very first couple times that we made it, it took four or five people 5 days. The first time we hand zested and then juiced all the limes, that was terrible. The second year it was actually slightly better, but we took and used mandolins and thinly mandolined every single key lime to get that in the beer. You know, we care about quality and we care about real fruit, and we took some lumps getting it in there from the early days, and we've got a little bit better technology and equipment now. But I like that we did that. And while those days a lot of times sucked, it was fun, and it got us to where we are today. So you got to appreciate it.
Builds character.
It does. It does. Cut proof gloves when you're using the mandolin.
Yes.
Or the guard.
Yeah.
Holy cow. So I got a two-part question. What is the most difficult fruit to work with? You know, I know you said the key lime, but is there any one that you can think of other than that that's like, oh, this was a really tough one as well? And then what's the most difficult, I don't want to word that, what's the most difficult flavor for you to get in a beer?
Yeah, so the toughest fruit to work with, in my opinion, is not actually going to be a singular fruit. It's actually going to be a type of like category of fruit. So we do a series of beer that we call Astronaut Food. They're made with freeze-dried fruit. And so basically what happens is the fruit goes through a sublimation process, all the water is extracted, and you're left with this like sandy, pebbly mixture that is just the fruit solids. So what that allows you to do is you can pack even more fruit into the beer because you don't have all that liquid to deal with and displacing the beer. And because it is so thin and pebbly, you know, we don't necessarily know how that's going to react when we reconstitute it in the liquid. I mentioned the centrifuge, and that allows us to do these products because otherwise it literally will stay suspended in the liquid, and it ends up being gritty if you don't properly centrifuge it and spin it out of the beer. You know, but even more to that, we recently this year did a freeze-dried peach one version. We'd done just berries in the past, and man, the amount of viscosity that added when it reconstituted was insane. Like, we knew that from Stoneford in the past, but we hadn't seen those same kind of things happen when we did berries with that freeze-dried fruit. So that's been the toughest one to deal with because it's been so variable fruit to fruit. And, you know, it's the most expensive beer in the world to make, right? Like, we're sitting there with $50,000 of just fruit ingredients in a tank at one given time. So it's, you know, in a lot of ways terrifying, right? Because that's not the normal cost of a batch of beer, you know, even on much larger scales. So that's the toughest to deal with. And then the second question was toughest flavor to get through, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to answer this because there's a lot of flavors that are tough to get into beer properly. But I'll do one that you can do, but it's not, it's still tough. And so that to me is blueberries. All right. Actual blueberries, not a ton of flavor, right? No. I think what people think of in terms of blueberry is a lot of, whether it be extracts or natural flavors, they're chemicals that have been derived to get that intensity of blueberry flavor. So there's one main way that you do this. So most fruit, like I said, low temp pasteurization, but blueberries specifically actually benefit from some extended cooking to help bring out their flavor and cook off some of that water content and kind of concentrate the flavor a little bit. And then the other way that we've been, in my opinion, the most successful with blueberries was actually sourcing Canadian lowbush blueberries. So the reason why those work better and they're so different is they're much smaller. So American blueberry is probably 3 to 4 times the size of a Canadian lowbush blueberry, which means it's got more water content. So on a pound for pound basis, those Canadian blueberries are just going to be so much more intense, richer, fuller flavor. And that's because of that. Like, I didn't expect a blueberry beer to ever taste that good is one of my all time favorite beers that we did because of how well that turned out.
Hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of times people think of blueberry flavor, especially in the pastry world. It's the combination of blueberries and vanilla and sugar. Those three things come together and really bring out whatever flavor is in the actual fruit of the blueberry that you're putting into there.
Cool.
Yeah. So we've done all this talking about the amazing beer at Urban Artifact and your processes. I think it's time we get into our featured beer from Urban Artifact tonight. This is the big boy beer at Urban Artifact. I believe this is your flagship, your number one. This is the Gadget. What would you like to tell us about this beer?
Yeah, so brewed with raspberries and blackberries. It's about 2 pounds per gallon. You know, I call it the prettiest beer in the room. And that's where I kind of show people, like, hey, when I say we use real fruit, look at the color. That's how you can know. That's how you can tell. Super jammy, balancing acidity, like fresh picked berries. That's my flavor descriptors. It's beautiful. And it's a very, very sneaky 8%. Like, you drink it, and every time people are like, it's what? Huh?
Excuse me?
Yeah. Like, oh, that's dangerous. Like, yeah, that's kind of the point.
So is this a beer that, like, what's the background on this beer? Is this a beer that you launched on day one? Is this a beer that was developed through research and development? Where did this beer come from?
Yeah, I agree, because I was going to try to add that anecdote in. So we were...
Set me up here, Scotty.
Yeah, there we go. It's like we set this up. So we had success. You know, we started out as, you know, sour and wild beers. Wild beers did not sell. But we started to find success with the American palate once we were adding fruit to the beers as well. And I mean, we love fruit, so it was great. We're like, oh, this is fantastic. And then, you know, the first one was the Key Lime one that I mentioned earlier. And then we just kept asking ourselves, okay, you know, those were based on Gozas. Why do a lot of these beers never taste like the fruit that they say is on the label, right? Like, what? Why is that? And we're just like, well, maybe they just don't use enough. And so we're like, we're going to use what we think is going to be enough to actually get an intense flavor. And thus the Gadget was born. It actually, the very, very first small test batch started out as black raspberry. And this was one of those times where we're like, oh, and black raspberries were cheap then. Let's be honest. But we're like, okay, we're just going to charge what we need to. And either people are going to respond and buy it, or it's a 2-barrel test batch. You know, we're not out of time. People loved it. We soon scaled it up. We did a series of Midwest fruit tarts originally. Gadget didn't just go to year round right away, but I was telling people that they kind of know Northeast, and I saw somebody from Akron earlier, so they'll know this. Northeast Ohio beer, the Winking Lizard is just a stalwart of craft beer. John Lane was knighted in Belgium for his support of Belgian beers. It's, you know, a 15 restaurant location that does great one of the best beer programs in the country, especially when you're talking about multi-store restaurant. Anyway, you know, I had my first meeting with him, running through what we do and things like that. And I get to the gadget that wasn't necessarily my lead right then. And he's like, that's the one. That's the one I'm going to put on the menu. He's like, you have to make that year round. I was like, okay, John, that's already where I was leaning. But you ask, you get it. So that's when we started making it year round, and it's been our best selling product ever since.
It's phenomenal. Braxton, I don't know if you have any more articulate thoughts to add, but it's phenomenal. It's jammy, it's smooth. The acidity complements the fruit flavor very well.
It's similar. You know, Scotty, you're right. You know, doing the whole sour beer thing doesn't do it justice. I think it just like puts it in the wrong kind of category, because even though when you said that, I was like, I'm not expecting anything too sour, but this is just, it's just nice. It's just very, it's sneaky too. Like you said, with the 8, I had to double check the can. I was like, I think maybe he got the wrong beer. I was like, oh no, it's there. It's 8. You are correct. And even the can is super cool. Like the gadget in the back, like it's very, like it flows together. And even that symbol right there, where if your name was going, they could recognize that symbol. I like that, those little parts to a beer that really makes it for me. And yeah, this beer is deceptively sneaky, and I like it. Like it needs its own category. It just needs its own, like putting sour beer on there just throws me for a loop, because I'm just like, this is just like crazy. And putting the real fruit there as well, because I feel like a lot of people will put, oh, we have fruit in there, but it's not real fruit. It's fruit. It came from a tree or a bush, but it's not.
At one point.
It went through a process, but this is just like, Even hearing the way you go to make this beer with the fruit, it's amazing. It's amazing. That's all I have.
Thanks. Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that you noticed was that kind of I call it round acidity, right? So it's not sharp, it's not one note. And I liken that, the reason for that being is the natural fermentation that we do. A lot of breweries will just add some fruit grade acids, and they'll do their own work, and they'll come up with some really nice blends. But ultimately, I just don't think they compare to the natural fermentation, because there's just so many compounds that aren't going to get isolated and sold as a food grade acid to add to your product and to give it that tartness. So I think that helps with that acidity and make it nice. You kind of come in and it rolls you right out. The other thing, one of my fun facts about the gadget specifically, just kind of quantify like how much fruit, right, is in this, is we account for 0.1% of the entire raspberry market in the U.S. and 0.2% of the entire blackberry market in the U.S. because of how much gadget we make and sell. Like, people love it. It's a ton of fruit. So much so that we got a farmer out in Oregon to plant a crop of golden raspberries for us. So as long as there's nothing wrong with harvest this year, we will be able to produce the exclusive golden raspberry beer later this fall.
That's
hell yeah. Hell yeah.
That's yeah.
That's fun.
Well, speaking of mind blowing facts, you know, we had Steve on last week from the Heritage Beer Brewery Trail. And, you know, he was talking about, I can't pronounce the M word, right? The Merlin. I don't think I'm saying it right. But
Moreline.
Moreline. Yeah. Thank you. Moreline. And then Bockfest. He was talking about the goats with Bockfest. You know, I believe you have something special going on at Urban Artifact. You know, maybe Pittsburgh does something similar. What is this event that you have?
Yeah, so we do a yearly pickle day, and you know, people don't know us. We are the, as far as we can tell, the originators of the pickle beer here in the U.S. at least in this most recent renaissance of craft beer. We brewed it for the first time in the winter of 2015, scaled it up the next year to a distribution batch on draft only, and then started packaging it the following year. So this year it became a mainstay. On our light up, year-round light up, I tell people it's like biting into a homemade dill pickle. It's just bright. It's vibrant. It's a great pairing beer, especially with a burger or a pastrami sandwich.
Oh,
Yes, exactly.
Get out of here. Oh my God.
So, you know, it's a fun product. So we want to have a fun day around it to celebrate it. And so we started with, you know, let's do a pickle eating contest. And, you know, it's come drink pickle, watch people eat pickles, buy pickle things from vendors, just celebrate everything that is pickle. Because there's not, you know, Pittsburgh has a great event already that celebrates pickles every year. There's not been that thing in Cincinnati, even though we have, you know, this great German heritage that, you know, we drink gozas and have sauerkraut and things like that, things that you would liken within that realm of pickled things. So we celebrate that way. And this year it's thankfully we finally got everything lined up with production. We're doing our first pickle pack. So it's going to be a pickle variety pack for the first time. We've done versions of pickle, but this one will be a regular pickle, spicy Chicago relish, and then bread and butter all in a 12 pack. So it's a fun package. It gets to celebrate pickle. And then we get to watch, I think we have 50 people signed up for the pickle eating contest. So I've got a lot of work ahead of me the next couple of days to make sure everything's lined out for these people to show up on Saturday and eat a lot of pickles up on stage.
Yeah, I don't think we've mentioned this. We're talking on a Tuesday. Pickle Day is the coming Saturday. So yes. Listeners at home, if you're listening this on Friday when it drops, as you should be, tomorrow is Pickles Day. Yes. Pickle Day. Yeah, I can't wait to ask you the next question after this, where your distro is, so maybe I can get a pickle mix pack. But before we get to that, other than beer, what is one thing you wish Cincinnati was more well known for?
So my second love is ice cream. And I travel all around the country. I try ice cream. And I look at grocery stores and I see selections and I'm always disappointed. I think Cincinnati has a crazy good ice cream scene. Now, most people know Graters, right? Because they got the Oprah shout out, whatever, 10, 15 years ago, really blew up nationally. Delicious, delicious ice cream. But there's also a competing creamery called UDF that has a bunch of, you know, C stores around the area. And they have this or cookies and peanut butter cookies and cream ice cream that I've never had anything else like it. Literally, it was out of stock for, I don't know, a couple months. Every time I've seen it, I bought it. I still have three containers in the fridge. It's an absurd amount of ice cream to have, freezer, for at any one point in time, because I can't eat that much. But I'm making sure that I have that ice cream in my fridge, and I think a very underrated ice cream scene in Cincinnati.
Nobody has mentioned ice cream yet. And I think this is the first talk on any podcast ever of the ice cream scene in any city. So, good on you. That's a great answer.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, shit. I got to go back to Cincinnati and get some ice cream.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Scotty, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find Urban Artifact Beer?
Yeah, so we're distributed to 22 states now, primarily the East Coast. You know, if you're, you know, PA, Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky, I'm not going to name them all. We recently just launched New York and New Jersey. Virginia's soon on the horizon, as soon as next month, to be number 23. But, you know, we've got a pretty wide net. You're going to find us in your better independent accounts in most of those states at this point in time. And some, you know, some chain spots here and there, depending on where we're at in the market. But yeah, take a look at our website. We have a great product finder as well. You can even filter down by product for what you're looking for, whether you want more gadget or you want some pickle.
I love that. That's amazing. I seriously, as somebody who is spending a lot of time on brewery websites, love finding a beer finder. Yes. Thank you so much, Scotty. Braxton, final thoughts on Cincinnati. This is our final episode of Cincinnati.
Apparently, they have a booming ice cream scene that I need to go and see. And we need to get a way of figuring out how, Scott, you know, you can do something with the beer. You can do something with the ice cream. Combine it. Make a beer float. I don't know, but I'm excited to see something happen, and I'm excited to see Cincinnati and try out some of these breweries. There's a lot to get to now. Oh, man.
Look, I mean, at the very least, you and I are going out there for Bockfest next year, and I think Pickle Day now. We can't make it this weekend, but next year. No, I love Cincinnati. I've always had a love for it since I first went out there. It feels akin to my local town, and I know to bring everything back to Pittsburgh, as I always do, it's the only talking point I have, but it's a city I immediately felt at home in and felt familiar. From the industrial roots to the rivers to the amazing beer scene and the even better people that make that beer scene what it is, it feels so homely and welcoming. So if you haven't gone to Cincinnati, what are you doing with your life? Go out there. It is, I'm not going to name all three of them, but there are three beer scenes that I think are criminally underrated in this country, and Cincinnati is one of those three. And people absolutely need to learn more about the excellent beer that is being made in Cincinnati. Final episode of the Cincinnati Month. Huge shout out to all of our featured breweries this month, including 50 West Streetside. Thanks for inviting me thanks for having me to do the first episode of the month there. First live stream from a brewery. Shout out to Streetside. Also, thank you to Listerman, Ryan Geist, Mad Tree, and tonight's feature brewery and guest, Urban Artifact. If you want to follow Mad Tree, you could follow them at Mad Tree Brewing on Instagram. You could follow Urban Artifact at urban.artifact on Instagram. Thanks again to Mad Tree and Urban Artifact for supplying beers for this episode, as well as our brew club. If you're interested in joining our beer club, head over to shop.citybrewtours.com. Lots of membership perks come with joining the beer club, including getting awesome beer shipped to you on a monthly basis. Next week, we'll be back with our next featured city. And I don't even know how to preview this one. So I'm just going to drop a dime on this. We're going to Brooklyn, New York next month. I'm super excited to share a borough in one of the biggest cities in the world and showcase that even a big city like New York has little unknown amazing beer scenes in it. And I'm super excited to be joined by an old friend for those episodes. So until then, everybody stay safe, be kind, and support local breweries. Cheers.